It's 9 a.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on the KBOO Radio Zine is the bike show with special guest Bill Sinnott, who is the commander of the Portland Police Traffic Division, and Greg Raisman, Portland's Department of Transportation's traffic safety specialist. They will discuss projects that they are working on to make the streets safer for cyclists. At 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller speaks with Lily Coney from the Electronic Privacy Information Center and John Young from Cryptome.org about legal and illegal domestic government surveillance. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, the topic is the Abramoff case. Guests include Peter Stone, a staff reporter from the National Journal, ABC's Brian Ross, researcher Judd Legum, and representatives of Indian tribes defaulted by Abramoff. So, now here's the bike show. Oop! Before the bike show, this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from City Bikes, a worker-owned, cooperatively run bicycle shop with two locations. City Bikes Annex offers new and used bicycles and trailers at 8th and Southeast Ankeny, 503-239-6951, and City Bikes Repair Shop, which has a large selection of used and new parts just west of 20th and Southeast Ankeny, 503-239-0553. More information at citybikes.coop.
And good morning. You're listening to the KBOO Bike Show here on KBOO in Portland. We are on the air the first Wednesday of every month from 9 to 10 o'clock a.m. In addition, we are also now being podcast on the net. Our podcasts air just several hours after our live program airs, and the podcast also includes some full archive programs. You can find out more information about this and listen to some of our archives at yeabikes.net/radio. That's yeabikes.net/radio, and find out more about different options for listening to the KBOO Bike Show and getting your friends around the world to listen as well. And good morning. I'm Aileen. Happy to be here this morning.
And I am Sarah, and pleased to be here on this first bike show of 2006. We're joined this morning in the studio by Greg Raisman. He's the Portland Department of Transportation Traffic Safety Program Specialist. Welcome, Greg.
Thanks, Sarah. It's good to be here.
And we've also got Bill Sinnott. He is the Portland Police Traffic Commander. He's been in that position for 1 year, and we are honored to have you here, Bill. Welcome.
Good morning. Good to be here, too.
All right, and we'll be talking to these gentlemen for the hour. We'll also be taking calls later in the program. But first, we wanted to do a little recap of the old 2005. It was a good year, and the future is looking bright. 2005 had some highlights for me. One of them was last year's Critical Mass in January. This is when Tom Potter came out and rode with Critical Mass, and that was kind of a nice, a symbolic thing, just that something that's kind of controversial and being taken on by the mayor, kind of looking to make it a positive. Critical Mass can get gnarly, and it was a very positive ride and a positive move, I think, by Tom Potter to come out and join us. And it was an event where you saw everybody from the bike community. It brought out the people from the city. It brought out the kids. It brought out everybody, and it was a real pleasant thing for me, really awesome. And that was more the highlight of the year for symbolism for me. But the funnest event that I did in 2005 was the Art Hop at Alberta, and this was where we brought the Trash Mountain Boys out on the couch bike and had a rolling rock party. And this was just, for me, the complete highlight. I had my sidecar bike with Reverend Phil drumming in there and my dog sitting on there, perched on there, and Timo and the boys on their couch bike cruising along, and it was just the most melodious and fun thing for me. So 2005, couch biking, and bring on more couch biking in 2006.
I think one of my favorite events of the year was the Multnomah County Bike Fair. It's a one-day festival that happens on the last Saturday of June every year. This year will be our fourth year. And it brings out a wide variety of people, and it's a full day of bicycle challenges, events, competitions. There's food and music throughout the day also. And it's outside at Colonel Summers Park, which is a beautiful open park that the community right around there feels is underutilized. So they really welcome us when we go to their neighborhood association meetings. They really welcome us into the community for that day. And that was a great event. I totally loved it. It's wacky. It's full of energy throughout the day. It's hot. And it's a lot of fun.
In 2005, personally, I had an awesome year. I went all over the world, it feels like. I went to Europe and talked to lots of people from all over the world at the Car Free Cities Conference. And I also went to New York City and stayed there for almost a month and a half total. And just got to see and hear about conditions for biking all over the world. And I also went to Amsterdam. Whoa, like the most dreamy place for biking ever. Blew my mind completely. And then New York City, pretty much the most challenging place in every way for cyclists. Really borderline dangerous. And I've lived in Portland for 15 years now. And I think before I left on my trip, I had been starting to get a little complacent about how great it is here and how comfortable it is here and the positives. And coming back to Portland, and I think we're on kind of riding a wave of positive bike culture. There's a lot of support from the government, and it's real nice to have a supportive mayor. He rides a recumbent, and he relates. He knows what it's like to ride a bike, and he knows it's good for the environment and good for community. And I feel there's a lot of positive stuff going on. We have the new bike lane markings on the road, and just recently they started to unveil the bike signs. So on the bike boulevards, there'll be a sign telling you Lloyd Center coming up 2 miles, pointing you in the direction, downtown coming up. And that seems a little bit like a small accomplishment, but we've been waiting for that for almost 10 years. It's been something, somehow these changes are hard to come by. It takes a lot of process. And so I'm really excited to see those signs and excited to see the positive changes that are happening. And I wanted to mention a bit of history that makes it so that Oregon has this very positive bike environment. And it's brought to my attention, and I think it's worth mentioning, because in 2005, the author of the bike bill, which was passed in 1971, the author of that bill, Don Strathos, he was 81 years old, and he died this year. And this gives us an opportunity to look back on his accomplishments, which had a very big and positive effect for Oregon. He was a Republican state representative and a serious bike rider, and he noticed that, hey, it's really hard to bike, and how could it be that we've designed our communities so people can barely even get out on the road and ride bicycle? And he passed the bike bill, as it's known, which set aside 1% of highway funds on new projects that they must be dedicated to bike infrastructure and bike improvements. And this was a very radical thing, the first of its kind in the nation. And as of 2001, Oregon still the only state that mandates funding for bicycle and pedestrian facilities when new projects go into effect. And this is something that just gives a little backbone to the biking activists and advocates to make progress. And it was challenged in 1993, tried to overturn this bill, and the BTA, which was a very new organization at the time, actually went to the lengths to sue the city of Portland because there was a project where they were not going to be including major, there was a major project, it was around the Rose Quarter, and the Department of Transportation did not want to include the bike lanes. So it's a violation of the bike bill, And the BTA stood up for the rights of bikers and insisted that bike lanes be put in. And they were successful in their lawsuit. And it's actually something like the combination of those two things, the passage of the bill, and then the really standing up for the bill when it was challenged. These are things that make the fabric of Oregon positive for biking and make it possible for us to make just these incredible progress, which we really are a great biking city. And it's something that it's not happening in other cities in America. And I think we have a chance to be an example to other cities. And that, to me, is a motivating factor for making these examples come true, because we have the environment to make it happen. And so that leads me well into our guests, who I think they're in positions, working in different departments, the police, City of Portland. These people, Greg Raisman from the City of Portland, Bill Sinnott from the Police Department, to work as a community, each department doing what they can to make positive improvements for biking. And we want to hear from these guys now about what they are working on. And first, I'd like for them just to tell us what their job is and what the big scope of what you do. So, Greg, if you could tell us, what's it all about? Traffic Safety Program Specialist.
Sure. I work for a program called the Community and School Traffic Safety Partnership. And my role as part of that partnership is to really be play some lead roles in bicycle safety issues in terms of researching strategies from around the world that are employed for looking at best practices in engineering, education, and enforcement in order to reduce the number of people that are getting hurt and dying while bicycling, and also to encourage more people to bike, because as our city gets safer and more comfortable and more family-friendly, it's going to become more and more comfortable for people to ride their bikes, and that's definitely a central part of what we do. I also work on crash data analysis. We get crash data from the state, from the Oregon Department of Transportation each year, and we've started to be able to actually map that information and to look at it on a map and really start to analyze types of crashes, types of places, types of conditions where crashes are occurring, and we're actually continuing to work towards being able to release maps for every neighborhood in the city to show how and where crashes are happening by neighborhood for neighborhoods. And then I also work on some school traffic safety issues and other tasks as assigned.
Nice. Well, thank you for that overview. And Bill, can you tell us, what does it entail to be the police traffic commander?
Well, I'm in charge of the traffic division. The police bureau is very large, and a very important component of what we do is traffic investigations and traffic enforcement. As you know, I mean, the city is divided up into precincts, and each of them are responsible for geographical areas around the city. But the traffic division is responsible for traffic enforcement throughout the entire Portland area. And so primarily what we do in the traffic division is all of the traffic enforcement, the traffic investigations, DWI enforcement, the crash investigations. We work all sorts of special events throughout the year, including obvious ones like the Rose Festival Parade, but a lot of others too. When there's dignitary visits, or when the president, vice president, or other officials come to town who need escorts, we organize those. We do all the different neighborhood parades for different school events. There's approximately 100 special events a year, and it pulls us in all different directions because it usually takes almost everybody in the division to work them. We also work a lot of smaller problem type of areas. For example, if you see people going through the stop sign down at the end of your street, you can call 1-800-SAFE, and it goes over to PDOT, and then we have a computer system that comes that brings those complaints directly over to the traffic division. And we investigate every one of those. We do 400 to 600 complaints a year, and that involves a traffic officer going out and working all of these small problems. So our responsibility is huge. It's a very wide area of things that we do, but the people who work there are very dedicated to traffic enforcement. In a way, they're a lot like what Greg Raisman describes when he describes the people over at PDOT, they're traffic junkies. The people who work over at the traffic division are too. A little bit different area of expertise, but it all goes toward making the streets of Portland safer for everyone.
All right, thank you. And moving on to specific projects, Greg, can you tell us about the safety summits that happened last year?
Sure. There were a number of really exciting conversations that happened in our city during 2005 to really involve the community and neighborhoods in very specific conversations about how to work together as a community to make it so that we have safer streets. Two really neat things that happened were on, in a bicycle-specific way, there were what were called bicycle safety leadership workshops, which were conducted in each neighborhood district coalition in the city and were half-day events that included police, transportation, neighborhoods, and bicycle advocates. Having a half-day where there was first a traffic safety presentation, followed by a bicycle ride to places of key interest for the neighborhood, followed by a critical conversation about how we work together as a community if there's major tragedies or major issues around cycling in our neighborhoods. The other thing, and a really important outcome of that, which I hope we see more of actually, is that the Southeast Uplift District Coalition actually started a neighborhood bike safety group. That was came out of that. The other thing that happened this year that was great was that there was a citywide transportation safety summit that was led by Commissioner Adams, where over 200 Portlanders came together to have 15 different panel discussions around specific traffic safety issues, everything from bike safety to intersection safety and school safety, how to reduce drunk driving, and so on. And I think that the cycling community will really want to keep tabs on Commissioner Adams' blog as a traffic safety action plan is being worked on now and will be brought forward through that blog for public comment so that we can work together as a community to really identify specific strategies from that summit and from the summit recommendations to actually implement the change that people came together to talk about.
Nice. And how about the community and school traffic safety partnership?
Well, the Community and School Traffic Safety Partnership is the program that I specifically work for, and it's staffed by six people, and I won't get into all those roles, but basically what's happened is that in 2003, the Oregon legislature passed a bill that increased the amount of that fines are when traffic violations happen. And after that happened, city council said, okay, there's going to be some new money that will be coming into the city because of this change. And what we're going to do is dedicate all of that money, that new money, to a traffic safety account. So that funds a lot of traffic safety services in the city. And from there, a partnership has really been, it actually started a couple years before that, but has really been strengthened since then, where it's headed by transportation and police, the Community and School Traffic Safety Partnership is, but it also includes neighborhoods and the courts, health professionals, bicycle and pedestrian advocates, the schools, the trauma nurses. I mean, I could keep going in terms of the level of community participation in this partnership, which looks at traffic safety in three ways. It looks at it in terms of bicycle and pedestrian safety, safe routes to school, and reducing driver error. And there are technical advisory committees for each of those areas where community partners have been meeting regularly for a few years now, to develop programs and to learn about programs and efforts from really all over the world that we can implement here by using basically a system that says that when you violate traffic rules that are going to endanger and make our streets less safe, we're going to use strategies that are going to make it so that you're less likely to violate again in the future.
Nice. Sounds good. Do you have any questions for Greg? Okay. Well, we'll have an opportunity for callers to call in and talk to Greg, ask him some questions about how they can get involved. But first, we want to get an overview of what the police are working on to make streets safer for cyclists. And so moving on to Commander Bill Sinnott, and how about enforcement actions? This is something we've heard about and mm-hmm. like to hear from your point of view, where the idea started and what exactly does it mean?
Well, the police bureau has recognized for many years that bicycling is greatly increasing in the city, and that the roads are being shared by motorists, bicyclists, and pedestrians. And that although education and engineering are both important, they're absolutely vital, and we couldn't make our streets safer without those components, that enforcement obviously needs to be an important component of making the streets safe. And so as far as making the streets safer for bicyclists in particular, and this goes right into pedestrians too, we've been looking for different ways to do this, and there's a couple ideas that have come up, and some of these ideas have been brought to us by citizens, like in the Bicycle Advisory Committee that PDOT runs. There was a gentleman there one day at the meeting who asked me if I had heard about a program they were running. I think it was in Cincinnati, and he asked me to look at their website, and it was a program where a police officer will go out and ride on a bicycle, and a uniformed officer either on a motorcycle or in an unmarked car would shadow him and look for violations that would occur around that bicyclist, whether somebody was trying to cut him off or riding through the bike lane or in some way encroaching on the safety of that bicyclist. So it sounded like a good idea. And so we began to do that, and we've only done it about three times so far. We plan on increasing the this particular what we call a mission. We've done it on the Burnside Bridge and on the Morrison Bridge, especially when you're going eastbound across the Morrison Bridge and you cross the on-ramp down on the McLaughlin. And it's a little bit touch-and-go there when a bicyclist tries to cross there. There's a bike lane that goes through. It's very well marked, but when motorists are cutting through there, they're going full speed. So we wrote a few tickets down there with motorists who are cutting through in front of bicyclists. We also ran it over on Hawthorne. And so that's just one of the many ways that we're trying to run different missions around bicycles. We've been going out and just doing bicycle lane missions, like out at 122nd and Halsey, where we take a few motorcycle officers out, and we'll just watch for vehicles to be riding through the bike lane out there, and then we write tickets as we see them. We also have done different kinds of enforcement. For example, at 26 and Clinton, just a few weeks ago, actually, I guess it was back in August. It doesn't seem that long ago. We ran a mission there one morning during rush hour, and we put out signs in all four directions from the intersection that said police enforcement mission ahead. And then we decided we would write all violations that we saw at that intersection, whether it be vehicles or bicycles. And it was kind of surprising. We had heard that there were cars running the stop sign, and we heard that there were bicyclists doing it too. So this fit right into our strategy of trying to target those areas where bicycles come together in a very congested way, and trying to do some educational pieces along with enforcement to show that bicycles and vehicles do share the road. And so, like I said, it was very surprising in that most of the violations we saw were bicyclists going through the stop sign. Almost every bicycle did go through the stop sign and didn't come to a full stop, and we recognize that's difficult to do on a bicycle, and I learned what a track stand was, and I've tried it, and I can't do it. And so we were really only writing tickets to bicyclists who went through at a pretty good clip, you know, 5, 10, 15, sometimes 20 miles an hour. Some bicyclists were coming up to the intersection, passing cars that were stopped. They're passing the cars on the right and then going right through the intersection. We didn't really have any close calls that morning, although we had seen them before. And so we hope to get the word out that, again, the streets are shared by bicycles and motorists. We're increasing enforcement against motorists, and we're also doing it with bicycles, too.
I have a question just about, I know that a lot of people just don't know what their responsibility is in sharing the road. They don't know what goes on with the bike lane, and I've had people ask me questions. What does it mean when it's a dotted line and the bike lane moves to the center? How do I react? What do I do? And I think, or I would expect that when somebody gets a ticket, first of all, no one really likes to get a ticket. It's probably not so fun for you guys to do that job. But I imagine that people have a negative reaction to getting a ticket, or they would not understand why they were getting a ticket. And I wonder, especially on the mission where you go out with a bike rider and shadow and watch for cars violating the ride of the bicycle, what was the reaction from the motorists? Are they surprised or irritated, or generally was there a reaction from them?
We get all different reactions. But most of the time, the motorists knew exactly what they were doing wrong. They're just not used to any sort of enforcement being taken against them. And what we find is most people do know the law, that they do know when they've violated the law. Sometimes they'll get a little bit cagey with you when you're talking to them about it when you're writing the ticket. But what we find is they do know what the law is, and that they knowingly went ahead and did whatever they did because they didn't perceive that there was any danger. And so we go ahead and write them a ticket, or we'll give them a warning, or just a verbal warning.
The other thing I'd add to that is that there's also been, in terms of your question piece around education, there's been a lot of work happening and will continue to happen. For example, and I know we'll talk in a few minutes about the Bike Light program, there's a handout that comes with that program that everyone that gets lights also gets a handout about basic bike safety laws. And we've also been working, the city and the courts have been working together for a few years, more intensely in the last few years that I'm aware of, to really work with the courts to develop better programs for education through the court system as well. So once people do violate that and are in the system, they're able to get more detailed information when they're coming through, so that if there are any questions or misunderstandings, that we have an opportunity to really clarify it, and hopefully people, as they get better information and more information, will continue to do a better job of following the law.
And sometimes the education is happens through the media. Like, people would learn that, oh, you can't cut off a bike rider because I saw it on the 11 o'clock news. Is that true?
That's a big reason why whenever we do these missions, we invite the news media to come along. And we usually have a pretty good response. That's what we count on. If we go and write all of these tickets on what we call a traffic enforcement mission, and the only people who knew that we did it are those who got the tickets, then we really haven't done a lot of good. But if we can get it on radio and TV and show people what we're doing along with the educational piece about what we're focusing on that day, then we find that it has a much greater impact. And I'm surprised at how the word spreads. For example, 26 and Clinton, before we were out there, everybody in the world knew that something was going on.
And I think we have a lot of catching up to do on education. So I think this is the enforcement. It of course, brings on a little bit of a negative reaction, but it is like a major way that people start to recognize and understand the laws, and we don't have that many educational programs in place, especially for adults. So as difficult as it is to get a ticket, sometimes that's the way that you start to learn the laws. And for myself, I have to say that is exactly how my education happened. I've lived in Portland 15 years, and I started biking here because it's the way to go, and really never really thought that you had to stop at a stop sign or even a red light. I thought, oh, bike rider, it's totally different. There's no test. There's no book. There's not really much of an education. You just go out and rough it. That's how I learned. And one of the ways that I learned the traffic laws, and now I consider myself a semi-expert on the subject, is because I rode with Critical Mass Bike Ride. And it's kind of a test case for dealing with bikes and the law. And there's some kind of bigger questions riding in a big group of bikes. It's not something that's commonly dealt with in the past. And here we are 10 years after it started in Portland, and we're still kind of trying to work it out. And one of the assignments for enforcement for the police is to look at Critical Mass Bike Ride, which happens on the last Friday of the month. Big group of bike riders get together and ride through the city together. And there's all kinds of different things that happen. Some people want to not obey all the laws, and you'll get a ticket from police. And we've had a pretty rough time in the past, and it's been a bumpy road for both bike riders and police. And I think some sort of bad relationship had developed due to various issues. But I feel like the environment at Critical Mass and the police response has been very positive. And to me, that looks like it's happened in the last year during the time when you've been the commander. And I'd like to know what the different approach, or if it's your choice to make a different approach, and what the approach is at Critical Mass.
You know, I really don't know if we have a different approach or not. Things have come together this year. And really, I think that the change came after the mayor was elected, and he rode in Critical Mass. And I think it was February, possibly was it January?
It was January.
Right. And from that point on, what we did was we created a roundtable, a group of police And those who wanted to represent themselves as critical mass, because as they've explained to us, critical mass is a leaderless group, that no one person can come forward and say that they're a spokesman for the group. But in order just to facilitate some sort of a discussion, there are people who write in critical mass who come and meet with us every month, and the meeting's facilitated over at Mark Ginsburg's office. And I think that that's what has turned things around. I think that this past year has been great. I think there's been good interaction between the police and those who ride in critical mass. For the most part, the rides have been extremely law-abiding. We've written very few tickets. I don't think there's been really any disruptions in traffic downtown. There have been very few complaints from citizens. And I think the people who ride every month, from what I understand, are still having a good time, except for this last month. Because they didn't have the ride because the weather
sure
was
did.
Horrible.
It was horrible and beautiful at the same time. We had a lovely ride. We missed you guys.
Actually, we were there. We were waiting. And we saw about 15 people show up at 5:45.
Yeah, you guys didn't know how great it was because you were all trapped in your car.
Well, we had 7 police officers on bicycles there, too.
Oh, I didn't see them. We had a beautiful ride. It was all kinds of singing, raining and pouring. It was the rainiest ride ever.
Well, you left early. People. You didn't wait for us. You left at 5:45.
Okay. It was super fun. Good.
I'm wondering if the Portland Police Department, I know a little bit about how it happens with MPDOT, but if you look to other cities in general it seems cycling is on the rise in a handful of cities around the U.S., and this is somewhat of a new issue. How do we deal with more of these people on the road on bikes? How do we deal with them in relation to the cars? So do you look to other cities? Is there a communications network to get together with other cities and see what they are doing to help foster that relationship and create those safe streets?
I think that that has been done in the past, but I haven't done it because I want to do it the Portland way, whatever mm-hmm. that ends up being. I don't see this as something that we need to look to other cities to figure out how it's done. I'm very pleased with the way that it's going. And Ellie Blue, Jason Worcester, Mark Ginsburg, and a few others have come to the meetings to work with us and tell us about what they're trying to accomplish, about what critical mass is. And I've had good support all the way up to Derek Foxworth. And I know that Mayor Potter is very supportive of us sitting down and talking about these issues every month. And we've had great success. That doesn't mean that in the future critical mass could grow to where there's 1,000 people again riding, and how you facilitate a ride like that without there being issues. I guess we'll find out if that occurs. I'm hoping that we stay on the same track that we are now, where they're very peaceful, fun rides where everybody, for the most part, obeys all laws. It puts the police in a difficult position when critical mass will, say, do in the past, like in the past, where they'll cork an intersection. Because if the police are coming along, we can't authorize an intersection to be corked, because just by default, that means that people are going through a traffic control device without stopping. It means that other cars might have a green light and they can't go because it's filled up with bicycles. Well, the police can't authorize that. Now, if it's a permitted event, we can, and critical mass certainly could apply for permit. But it's been explained to me that that goes against what critical mass stands for, that critical mass is different, that they want to show the public that they stand for other things, that bicycles are, I'll leave that to people from critical mass to explain. But I understand it, and I actually sympathize with it. But at the same time, the police can't sanction people who break the law.
And one of the most interesting things I heard at a critical mass meeting years ago with the police and with the then Mayor Vera Katz was the number of calls that come from people on the street, drivers, who see an officer there and see a cyclist go through the stoplight, and they call and they say, your officer was there and you let that cyclist go through the stoplight. Why is there this unfair enforcing of the rules? So it was really interesting for me to hear the number and the type of calls that come in for people who watch critical mass and they're in their car and they're outraged at what they're seeing. So I can see how it definitely puts the police in a very tricky situation dealing with this event. But also, outside of critical mass, is there work that's being done, any work that's being done between cities to look at how we create safe streets for cyclists? And since it's not just happening here in Portland, where cycling is on the rise, but it's happening in a lot of other cities also.
I'll defer to Greg about that, because he is the one who does that kind of research, and he passes it over to the police.
Yeah, and I'd say, you know, the bike enforcement actions that the commander referenced earlier, and he might reference actually to Cincinnati, was actually an idea from Utah, but it's an example of us looking. I'm sorry, Commander, I don't mean to kind of call you out on a little point like that, but it's just, you know, it is an example of us looking to another place for an enforcement technique and then implementing it here, because it's a model. You know, good ideas come from everywhere, and so why not learn about them and go after them? So that's one way that we've actually done it. And I'd say that also just kind of learning from how to really coordinate between agencies, you know, like PDOT, 823 SAFE is a place where you can call if you'd like to request enforcement actions. And that is actually in PDOT, but we coordinate with police in the Office of Transportation to actually provide some information about what's happening on the street to help them use their resources as community members are making requests. So that type of coordination also is something that, you know, we learn from how other cities work together and things like that.
Great. All right. Well, you're listening to the KBOO Bike Show. We're on the first Wednesday of every month between 9 and 10 a.m. Today we're talking to Greg Raisman. He's the Traffic Safety Program Specialist for the City of Portland, and Commander Bill Sinnott, who is the traffic commander for the Portland Police. And I want to talk now about my favorite police action right now, which is so friendly that I just feel so proud of Portland right now. We've got a bike light giveaway going on, and I want to hear about that.
Yes, we do. Several months ago, the mayor's office was giving the police bureau different amounts of money to use toward community outreach projects, community policing projects. And the money was divided up between all the precincts, and we got some of the money over at the traffic division. And so we decided to do restart our bike rodeos for young children. And also I was looking for some way to do a little bit of outreach to the bicycle community to begin to reacquaint them with the police to just do a little bit of outreach. I thought of handing out bike lights. As it turned out, it was already a project that was being done in the city. Is it Jeff Bernard?
Yes.
And the Get Lit program. I didn't know about it at the time, we certainly would want to work with them too. Anyway, so we didn't have the money yet, and I called up Greg Raisman and asked him if he thought this would be a good idea, and he said that they had some money that possibly they could get us going a little bit quicker. And so with that, we got, I think, 200 lights right now is what we have.
400. 200 has been brought so far, but yeah, we have another 200 in the bay.
And so it's a pretty good quality light. I think it's a $30 light. It has a blinking red light to the rear. I think they're at retail, they're, what, $30, and I think we're getting them for quite a bit less, maybe around $10 or so. And so so far we've handed out, I think, our first 200 lights are pretty close to that in about a month and a half. I've been real surprised at the amount of positive coverage that has come from this. I mean, all we really wanted to do was to, reach out to the bicycle community and begin to do some educational pieces about the importance of the lights. And again, I think it's been misunderstood by a large part of the community that we're just giving away lights to people who should get a ticket. And it really isn't about the lights. It isn't about that particular violation. It's about bicycle safety and increasing awareness through all of this media attention that bicycles and vehicles share the road, and that it's important for bicyclists to begin to think more about their safety, especially now in these winter months when it's dark outside. Now, this doesn't mean that we won't be giving out tickets, too. For example, if we see a bicyclist without a light, but he's also just run a stop sign or commit some other violation, we might give them a ticket for the moving violation, but we'll give them the light, too. And sometime in the future, we might start to write tickets, especially with all of this media coverage that we've had. I think everybody is becoming pretty well aware that you need a light on your bicycle. So sometime in the future, we'll start writing citations to someone who doesn't have a light on their bike. But in the meantime, there's been a lot of good contact between the police and bicyclists.
And how about the reaction when you give a ticket? Usually you're not getting a happy biker. But what about when you give a light?
They're happy. They're ecstatic. They're very, very surprised. And I think it's just good positive interaction between the... It's something... I mean, The police give tickets, especially in the traffic division. That's what our folks do there, and they're very good at it, and they're just ticket-writing machines. And, you know, a patrol officer from a precinct who's just on patrol work, they might pull people over once in a while, and they'll give a lot of warnings. But sometimes with their other duties, responding to other emergency calls around the city, they don't have a lot of time to write citations. But in the traffic division, that's our responsibility. And so when we gave our traffic officers the ability to go out and do something like this, that was very positive. And that was so well received by the public, they were happy that they just didn't leave a disgruntled citizen there who got a citation, but they were actually able to do something positive too.
And along those lines, an amazing program I've heard about that I started to work on getting started in Portland, though never saw it through to the end, is the idea of rewarding children who are wearing their helmets by giving them a ticket for a free, I shouldn't use that term, a coupon for a free ice cream cone or something like that. That's another great opportunity for the police to foster that good sense of community relations and reward the cyclists for doing something that's correct. It doesn't work as well with adults, I would imagine, as far as ice cream cones go, but great program for kids, I think.
Mm-hmm. And actually in PDOT, through Safe Routes to School, we have a lot of encouragement efforts that are happening. We have 8 pilot schools in the city this year. It's our first year of piloting the national model for Safe Routes to School. And part of that is to do both in education by working with kids to help them really understand where the safe routes are for them to be able to walk and bike to school, and also how to do so safely. And there are encouragement elements to that. For example, there's a crossing guard effort where the crossing guard of the year for each school will get a really nice reward at the end of the year for really helping keep their kids safe in their school as they're walking to school and biking to school. So those type of encouragement actions are actually really coming out, and you'll see more and more of that as time goes on.
That's great. Our number here is 503-231-8187. We'd like to take your calls this morning if you have questions for our guests. Again, that number is 503-231-8187. Also, the KBOO Bike Show is now being podcast on the Internet. If you are unable to catch the program on a regular basis, our podcast will be up just hours after the program airs live. We also have some archived shows up there. And huge thanks to Chris Smith from PortlandTransport.com, that blog. He is podcasting our program for us. You can find out more information at PortlandTransport.com. Also on our website, yeabikes.net/radio. That's Y-E-A. bikes.net/radio. And again, our number here is 503-231-8187. So what would you say are some of the most exciting projects you've been working on lately? What's really got PDOT excited and the community excited for creating? Safety's not always an exciting thing, but I know PDOT's a pretty creative department.
That's true. I guess it depends on your perspective. I stay awake excited about safety practically every day. I think that in PDOT, there's a couple of really great things that have been happening and are about to happen. Our hub projects in interstate area and in Southeast have been great. The Southeast Hub actually just won Project of the Year from Women in Transportation Services and has had real impact on working directly with people in their neighborhoods to give them great information about how to reduce the amount of single occupancy driving that they're doing, reduce the amount of people driving on our streets, because we have 26.8 million miles a day driven. So it would be nice to be able to work to do more biking and walking and transit and carpooling, and that's what the hub project does. There's also been some really great stuff coming down the pike in terms of engineering. We're about to see some dollars put against bicycle engineering over the next 2 years, as well as pedestrian engineering. So we'll see for pedestrians a lot of new pedestrian refuge islands on big streets, on multi-lane streets with transit to help people more safely cross the street. And we're also right now working with the Bicycle Advisory Committee, and we'll be working also with the neighborhoods to allocate $300,000 a year for the next 2 years, so $600,000 total, against bicycle safety engineering, some specific projects citywide to be able to really make our facilities even better. And then I think going forward, the thing that we'll be most excited about is the traffic safety action plan as it becomes unveiled and starts to really become a big part of the community dialogue.
That's great. Thanks, Greg.
We got calls. Let's see what the callers want to know about.
Good morning, caller. You are on the KBOO Bike Show.
Oh, fine. Say, I'm really glad to hear this exchange, which is very friendly, especially listening to the traffic enforcement and citing bicyclists at 26th and Southeast Clinton. That's a route of mine going to work, and I drive a pickup when I go out to where my job sites are, and I go down that street. I'm careful because I'm a bicyclist and I have kids bicyclists, but for example, a few years back I had a cyclist 6 o'clock in a November morning when it was rainy and foggy out, visibility wasn't good. A fellow went right through eastbound on, rather northbound on 26th in a bicycle, and I didn't see him until he was right in front of my truck, and I had started out and I was able to slam on the brakes and stall my truck and not hit him, and he didn't even look back. And I was like, no light, nothing that I could see on him. And I didn't even notice he had a helmet. And I thought, damn, he's just asking for death. You know, he almost got it. And I was driving back just recently on MLK hitting southbound, and I was in the left-hand lane. There was a bus at Killingsworth waiting to turn left. The light was green, and traffic had been moving. It was light traffic. And some fellow on an old bicycle, an old fellow, I think, came right in front of the bus, which was waiting to turn left for the signal to change, and got right in front of me again. And luckily, I had about 20 feet. He came out just as I was near the end of the bus. No light, no helmet. Like, once again, someone's being crazy. What I see here is continually people not knowing how to use the road or share it with vehicles. And I'm very willing to share it. Another exasperation of mine is bicyclists who are untrained. And this happens to be, particularly seems to be young women who are riding 10 speeds and don't know enough to gear down so that when they start out, they can accelerate. I see them go out into busy traffic trying to make it an open pattern, and they can't move the bicycle. If you can't shift, you need to get off the bicycle.
Do you have some ideas for education? Or?
Well, yeah, it's like it's the same as driver's test is learn how to drive a bicycle and think as you come up to an intersection, shift down. I always do that so that I can dart if I'm going to dart because people aren't always seeing you.
Okay, thanks so much for your call this morning.
Wait a minute, one more.
We actually have a full line, so we're going to move on to our next caller. We've got only a few minutes left in the program, so our engineer is going to unfortunately have to cut that caller off. We have just a few minutes left in the program, and the phone lines are very full. We knew this was going to be a really popular program this morning, so caller, I apologize for that. We'll move on to our next caller. Good morning. You are on the KBOO Bike Show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great show. I'll be quick. First of all, I think it's a misnomer to call us bikers because that's a motorized, that's a Harley ride or so forth. The cyclist is the proper term. My preferred term is pedalist as opposed to motorist. But I'm really thrilled with what the city's done with the little tiny round signs indicating a bike lane along the Tillamook Corridor, for instance. These are little tiny pieces of that stuff they put on the pavement, that white stuff that. And they're little tiny, and they have a little bike insignia on them. These are great.
What can we call those, Greg?
Who's responsible for that?
What do we call those?
Well, those are.
I'll take my answer off here.
Thanks, caller.
Sure. Those are bicycle boulevard pavement markings, which is not a very attractive term or easy one to remember, but that's what they are. My neighbor actually calls them, which I think is a fun term, bike breadcrumbs. They're kind of show you the path. And what's neat about them is that they really show people where our bicycle boulevard network is. They provide arrows on the pavement to show where the bike boulevards turn. And there's actually now accompanying signage that's going in that will show up to three destinations, how far it is to get there, and how long it'll take you to bike there from where you are. So we really encourage people to use bicycle boulevards because they're places that have been engineered to be convenient and safe for bicycles, and hopefully over time we'll see a lot more bike boulevards in our city because they make our neighborhoods safer and more pleasant places to live and really provide great ways for people to get around the city on bike.
Great. Our number here is 503-231-8187. We'll go to our next caller. Good morning. You are on the KBOO Bike Show.
Good morning. My question has to do with ramifications for the drivers that might injure a bicyclist. Could you maybe elaborate on some of those laws we had a friend in Germany that was in the bike lane. A moped came into the bike lane and hit him, and he landed in the street and got run over. I'm just wondering what kind of fines there are for motorists if they injure a bicyclist, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
I think that, at least in Portland, the statistics show that those at fault, it's about 50-50 between bicyclists and motorists of those who are at fault when there's an accident between the two. As far as ramifications or consequences to the motorist, a motorist can be, if it's shown to be an intentional act, which sometimes occurs when there's a road rage incident, the motorist could be charged with assault, or if there's a fatality, the motorist could be charged with manslaughter. Usually, if it is truly unintentional, and it was because the motorist just wasn't paying attention, there are some serious fines that come from that. Those are usually determined by the district attorney, and he'll also determine what kind of prosecution that there will be, and for what sort of charge.
We'll go to our next caller. Good morning. You are on the KBOO Bike Show.
Yes, I just had a clarification thing. I've had this question, and I've asked other people, and they don't seem to know either. When there's a bike lane and you're trying to turn right, I would presume that the bike lane is not also a right turn lane. But if I'm trying to turn from the main lane, other people who are turning right come up beside me. What's the law there?
That's a good question.
And I'll just hang up.
Thank you.
Well, two ways of answering that. One, the motorist is supposed to watch out for the bicyclist, and he's supposed to look in his in their rearview mirror and see a bicyclist coming. So they're responsible to make sure that they don't hit a bicyclist. But I would also preface that with the bicyclist better be careful, too, because oftentimes motorists don't look. So I'm not saying the law says it has to be a cooperative effort, but I think that both of them need to watch out. And it isn't hard to do in a car, because when you're coming up to the intersection, you can see if there's a bicyclist there, if there's one coming. So it isn't because you're not going to see them. Now, if you've been stopped at the light for a while and you're waiting to make your right turn and there's a bicycle just to your right, you better turn around and better look. And I think the bicyclists need to be careful that they don't get hit by a car. But it will be the motorist that's at fault.
The other thing I'd add is, you know, a bicycle lane is a travel lane. And like any travel lane, when you cross it, you need to make sure that it's clear of other vehicles. And the striping on it is like other striping. A solid line is one that indicates you're not really supposed to cross it. It's when it's a hatched line that it indicates that you can, just like the yellow line in the middle of the road. So one of the things that also is a good cue for showing drivers when it's the appropriate time to go ahead and start their turn across that lane is when it moves into a hatched lane, a checked lane, or checked stripe, or no stripe at all.
Great. I would venture to say that that's a law that needs development, because it sounds like your rules of right-of-way don't particularly deal with going straight and making a right and bikes, as far as I know. And sometimes that's the way it is. We have new engineering bike lanes, and the laws were mostly written a long time ago, and it takes 10 years to make a change in the law. So I think maybe that's something that needs a bit more clarity.
You know, I agree. I think that the laws are clear, but I would say that when you're actually out on the street and you're looking at the way, say, an intersection is laid out, often it isn't intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think education is an important part of that, but I think it is still, it's an evolutionary process where motorists get more used to the rights of bicyclists.
We'll take one more caller. Good morning, caller. You are on the KBOO Bike Show.
Good morning. I think maybe two aspects of that education would be, first off, people learn how to drive cars. I'm rural, and I have to drive into Portland. It takes me an hour, and I notice that people don't drive correctly most of the time. People change lanes. They don't signal. So basically, you have a lot of people driving cars incorrectly. The second part of the education is a lot of the people that drive cars haven't been on a bicycle since they were little kids and don't realize the vulnerability of someone on a bicycle. They have no protection. There's no metal, there's no car to protect them. When a person who's angry, who's in a car, is in a hurry and just wants to slice someone off, I bicycle every day. I bicycle 8 miles every day. I'm a bicyclist. as much as I am a car driver. So when I drive, I'm very careful of cyclists. When I go to Portland, I am amazed that anyone has the guts to drive in city traffic, because I don't see people driving cars that well. I think it's a very brave thing for people to be cycling at all in the city, and I think the car drivers really need to look out for them. I think there needs to be some really strong legal protection against people that do hit cyclists, because I think people just sort of blow them off. They say, well, they go through stoplights today, you know, I almost hit them, da-da-da. And it's very scary driving, because, I mean, bicycling, because people are not driving well to
yes.
begin with.
Yes, thanks so much for
your
call this morning.
Bye.
Can I respond to that?
Yes, please do.
I agree that bicyclists are certainly more vulnerable. They're just riding a bicycle. And if it comes to a bicyclist and a car hitting, then the car is going to hurt the bicyclist. But almost all of the enforcement that we do in the city of Portland is against motorists. Out of the 120 to 130,000 tickets that we write every year, only about 500 of them are written to bicyclists. Of those 500 tickets, about half of those are written by the TriMet police for bicyclists who are downtown on the bus mall. And so my perspective as commander of the traffic division is that we're not doing enough enforcement against bicyclists either. Now, this lady has a good point that drivers need to be aware. They need to obey the law. They need to be aware of the vulnerability of bicyclists, and motorists need to be aware of bike laws. But what we're seeing is that bicyclists need a little bit of education, too. I hate to see it come in the form of a citation, but we do see that's effective, especially, as I said before, when we see that in conjunction with some media attention for a particular enforcement mission that we're going to do at a location that's high profile, where bicycles and cars come together, where there's a lot of congestion. And so she's got a lot of good points, but there really isn't very much enforcement done against bicyclists in the city, and we are going to change that.
One thing that I understand is now on the motor vehicle test that you're more tested on your knowledge of sharing the road with bicyclists, which I think is a new thing. Do either of you know about that?
No. I don't really know much about it.
I kind of wish car drivers would need to do a retest. You do one test when you're usually 16 years old, and then you're 50 years old, and the laws have changed many times in that span, and I don't know why that doesn't happen, but it's a curiosity to me, because it seems like you're operating a very dangerous big machine, and you ought to be sure that you are up to snuff on your performance and your alertness and your knowledge of the laws. So that would be something I would like to see maybe someday.
And this has been the KBOO Bike Show here on KBOO in Portland. Once again this month, we could go on and on. Thank you to all of our callers who called in this morning. And thank you also to our guests, Commander Bill Sinnott and Greg Raisman. It was great to have the two of you on the air this morning. We really appreciate the time you took to come down to the studios this morning. Once again, the KBOO Bike Show is now being podcast. You can go to yeabikes.net/radio. That's yeabikes.net/radio and read all about it. We are on the air the first Wednesday of every month. Make it a great day. Keep riding your bike, and we'll see you next month.
Miles to bring to your door the things of this world that you're longing for. Limes fresh from the groves of a southern nation. Wine pressed in the shade of the most expensive bell ever rung. And when my song is finally sung, you'll know. I'm the one for you. I carry your name in a golden locket, right next to my heart in my jacket pocket. My life as it is a meditation on you and the pure physical sensation of holding your hand, caressing certain little things no man can understand. Stand, oh, I bicycle miles.
I bicycle miles.
I bicycle miles. million worn by a million tires. I ride in the dawn through the wind and wires. My knapsack is full of tiny treasures, rings, ribbons, and things purchased for your pleasure. I sold my gun just to buy you yellow roses, 'cause you said they